this might have affected some of your relationships before. What was it that you were asking for, and was it really reasonable? If I start to spiral into the thoughts that it can bring up, I know I'm in trouble. You know that some of the things that you feel you want might sometimes be on the irrational side. Hello and welcome to another episode of The Single Girl's Guide to Life, your weekly guide to single life living in your 20s, 30s and 40s. I'm Chantelle Dyson, a love and life coach, helping you to bring love into your life, whether that's self-love, love for your friends, or the romantic kind of love that you find in dating and when you're looking for a relationship, all whilst making sure that you enjoy your single life as it is right now, because we cannot guarantee a relationship coming into our life. So it's building that confidence, making sure you've got the connection and support of true friendships, and moving through life even if your relationship status is not where you would like it to be. Now, on today's episode, we are going to be talking about moving from an anxious attachment style to a secure, or at least a more secure, attachment style. I have spoken a lot about attachment styles, whether I referenced them a little bit before or done full episodes on it. And I did an episode quite a while back now on how attachment styles might be affecting your dating experiences, which I will link here if you want to go back and listen to it. It's episode number 34. So yes, quite a while away now, over a year that I recorded that episode. And you can get the subscriber only episodes, one of which includes talking about managing that attachment style in dating. And we are predominantly focused in on the anxious attachment style, because that's one that I know the most about, because I live that experience. Now, from my reading, I know a lot about the others, and also being anxious, you generally naturally seem to attract the avoidance, and learning what they show up as, it's been interesting, but also having conversations with people of that nature, and especially the ones that you can then bring it to the attention of, trying to understand what it's like from their experience, how they feel and why they react the way they do. Now, that isn't what we're going to be focusing on today. Today, we're looking at the idea of shifting your insecure attachment style to something more secure. Now, people might perceive that it's quite difficult. Is this not to do with childhood? Is this not rooted in what happened in my upbringing? So no matter what I do, I'm going to have this as the basis. Now, attachment styles were predominantly thought to be caused by our upbringing, and I could probably find some things that I would relate in there. But in terms of adult attachment, yes, it can be related to and have a foundation in our childhood upbringing, but it can also be influenced by so many other factors. You might have a terrible experience in a relationship, and that causes you to become more anxiously attached because you're becoming more untrusting. Or you might have negative experiences that lean you into the more avoidant section, where you don't want to let someone in because you're afraid of being hurt. We can have experiences in our adult time that determines that. It can move us from one section to the next. So just as much as we can be moved out of a secure section into a more insecure attachment style, we can also move from an insecure attachment style into secure. I always will refer to the book Attached by Dr. Amir Levine and Rachel S.F. Heller when I'm looking at attachment, because I think that's where I got the most information quite quickly from them. I had read a lot of articles prior to ordering the book, but it was early on in the book, in the introduction, where they say, although it's not impossible for someone to change his or her attachment style, on average, one in four people do so over a four-year period, most people are unaware of the issue. So these changes happen without their ever knowing when they have occurred or why. So already, we know that attachment styles change. One in four people change them over a four-year period. And that might be without any awareness of it at all. That's what's happening. And the reason they wrote this book, so they say, is that if people knew more about it and knew more about attachment styles, then they could consciously make those changes. So naturally, our attachment styles can change and they can shift. Now, the way that I so far have experienced it, in the sense that I was single for 3 years and have now been in a relationship for 6 months. So who knows, according to the 4 year thing, if I would have naturally done that even without a partner. The way I see it is the anxious attachment style is still within me. It still has the capacity to come out, but I am much better at both managing my reactions, in the sense that I understand where they come from, what they're about, and where possible and as best I can, I try not to let that override my management. And I describe it as a spiral. If I start to spiral into the thoughts that it can bring up, I know I'm in trouble. I know that I'm going to be reacting in an ineffective way. I'm going to be pushing someone big time. I'm going to be demanding more and asking for a lot more because for whatever reason that I have been triggered in, I'm starting to feel anxious. And the way that I can bring that down is to be in control. So I'll ask for more and I'll be more, not pressuring. I want more. Like, give me attention. Talk to me now. It will be like immediacy, urgency, give. And that pushes someone to an edge. So I have to try not to get to that state. I have to manage my emotional state. And then also over time, it involves communication, not just in that moment of when you're triggered, but before and after, and not letting things get to a point where they're not bad. I don't think I've ever left a situation to be bad, because when you have an anxious attachment style and you understand it well enough, you know that some of the things that you feel you want might sometimes be on the irrational side. There's a fine line between what's kind of reasonable and then what goes too far. So in terms of like keeping up contact with someone, I expect to speak to someone every day, but I can cope when someone goes to work. Whereas if you're expecting someone to message you whilst they're at work and being paid to do a job, unreasonable. If someone didn't message me between like 9 to 5, because I knew they had a job to do, then that's fine. It's different, however, if the consistency changes. Like if someone messages through their lunch break and has consistently done that for like a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, then that's what's happened. You know, during the break, we sent message. If over time that dwindles out and disappears, then that's the kind of thing I would pick up on. It's the change in consistency. So the early day, what gets established early on, can't be too much because it has to be sustainable. Otherwise, I will see that as a withdrawal. So I have much more understanding around it. I deem that it's still within me and it can be triggered at any moment. I just have better developed tools to deal with it. And that's why I want to help some of you to understand and do that. So that anxious attachment style is going to make you want to demand more. I don't know about you, but I don't feel fully out of control, but I can tell that my mind is almost separate to my body, or the emotional side of my mind is separate to the logical side. I know that some of this is extreme compared to what it should be, but I can't help it, and it's just going for it. That's the way that I would describe some of the experience of feeling that anxious attachment style. My brain will automatically think the worst if consistency isn't there. It's difficult. You get these elements of insecurity, of fear, of jealousy, fear of abandonment, and that can come in a number of forms, like fear of abandonment in terms of being forgotten about, fear of, quite naturally, being cheated on and left, and what a traumatic way for that to happen. Fear of abandonment that they will just leave at any point. You know, they'll end that experience, which is really hard in dating. It's actually very difficult for those with anxious attachment styles to stay single. There is an additional challenge to that because of the closeness that we're looking for and that we often over deliver in and desire, that can play into why we find it or might find it hard to be single. Not everyone that has an anxious attachment style will find it difficult to be single, but you will have that pang from time to time, and you will want that closeness that comes from your attachment. You want to feel safe by having the proximity of someone in your zone, even if it's not with you all the time. However, the anxious attachment style cannot continue to exist in its most extreme, and you need to learn how to manage it, because an anxious attachment style traditionally pushes people away. The jealousy and the insecurity becomes suspicion, accusatory, and why would anybody want to be in a relationship where there's that dynamic? It can turn into demands of control and unreasonable requests, realistically. So if you do have an anxious attachment style, I just want you to take a moment and reflect on the idea that this might have affected some of your relationships before. What was it that you were asking for in those relationships at those crucial times where you felt triggered, where you were having a negative response that was spiraling maybe out of control based on an anxious attachment trigger? And what were you asking for? And was it really reasonable? In hindsight, be completely honest with yourself. In hindsight, was it reasonable what you were asking for? Was it right? Or could it have just come down a notch? I'll give you a good example the other day, because it still comes out and I will default to it unintentionally. Now, I'm pretty level still. I communicate and try to be as effective as possible. And I always check in with my partner and say afterwards, if we have some sort of conflict, I'll say, Is there something that you can see that I could have done differently there that you'd like me to do differently? So I'm asking for that feedback once the situation's moved on. But at one point during it, they actually had to leave for an occasion. And I had said, well, you best expect to come round tomorrow and come back because we need a conversation about this. There's a slight teacher voice in it, I realise, but that's going to be a default. And you can see there, just in that request, that I was being demanding and I was looking for a way that showed someone was going to give me the attention, value me, hear me. They're the things actually that if you have an anxious attachment style, you really need. You need time and attention. You need to be heard. It's one of the biggest things of an anxious attachment style is that you need to be heard. But it was also like, I need this time. You're leaving because you have to go, but I need this time back. Now, on reflection, once we had taken some steps back, once there was some reconciliation as well, without prompt, my boyfriend still said, I will come round tomorrow and we'll work this out, or we'll do some amendments. We'd worked a lot out by having a conversation on the phone. I said, it's not worth it. I'm seeing you the next day. So you've got that rational brain coming back in. It's like, if I ask you to come round tomorrow to talk about this, that's a journey for you here and back. And it's more time out of your day. And I'm seeing you the next day when we can talk about this. And we've kind of dealt with some of the most difficult parts. We still need to have some conversations about what happened in person. We need to reconnect through physical affection. But now that we're out of the situation, that little underlying tone of what was there can now be dealt with appropriately. So as I say, it still comes out. It's still there. And that's partly what that is. It wanted time. It wanted attention. It wanted to know that it was going to get those things. And it was making the demand. It was asking for more. And you'll notice that I referred there to it as it, because I don't see that as an inherent part of myself. I see it as something separate to me, which can be useful, because then you don't demonize yourself with this idea of being needy. Like, I have a need, or there's this way that I can sometimes behave and it can ask for too much. So when I take a step back, I can see that that's too much. And I'm human. It's okay to admit that we might have pushed too far, or that we might have asked for too much. And the reality is that I didn't need someone to come round to show me that they cared. They made the time during that day to actually work on that, to eventually communicate and come back to it. But they had something that they had to get to. Now, to understand how you go from an anxious attachment style to a secure attachment style, you need to understand the differences between them. Communication is one of the biggest ones. With an anxious attachment style, you will hold yourself back out of fear that asking for something will push somebody away. But when you have a secure attachment style, you realize that asking for something and communicating what you need is important. So during the exchange that we had during that conflict, I was, despite the one demand that was too far and unnecessary, within that, I was, as best that I could, trying to explain what I needed. I was sharing that I needed time and we needed to give this attention, and it was quite urgent that that needed to happen, and that walking away was not going to help the situation. Despite having something going on, there needed to be a bit of flexibility just to have a quick 10 minutes. This was not solvable in 15 to 20 minutes, but it needed, based on what had happened, it needed some quite urgent attention. And I was able to communicate that, even within emotion, and talk about it. That is how I've moved. Before, I don't even think I was thinking about what I wanted or needed. I was not connected to my feelings effectively enough to know what I needed to ask for, to know what I needed to say to someone else in terms of what I'm looking for. And when I shifted, and when I really started to practice this, it led to more people being turned away. And you might go, why would I want to do that? Like, I'm going to turn people away if I do this. No, I had learned that by communicating, I was turning all the wrong people away much quicker. I wasn't wasting time feeling particularly hurt by people for long periods of time or getting strung along, because I made it very clear from the start what I was looking for. I was looking for someone that wanted to talk regularly. I was looking for someone that wanted to blend a life. I wasn't looking for someone that wanted to go traveling. I wanted someone that was going to commit. Now, you might go, is that not really demanding? No, there's a difference. That is saying what you want and need, and finding someone that's going to do that with you. That's just wants, preferences, desires. That's okay. And communicating that early enough on meant that I could turn away from the people it wasn't working with. So if things did only last 3 weeks, 2 dates, 4 weeks, I wasn't bothered so long as I had communicated everything accordingly. Prior to that, I might slightly adapt. Oh yeah, that doesn't bother me too much, Mia. Maybe I don't need to do that now. Maybe I don't want that. Oh, maybe I can do it this way. And sometimes they were tests to really see what I wanted, because some things you don't know until you try them out and then you're like, no, I don't want that. But that was a key part. And I know that my communication skills are a lot stronger than they have ever been. And 3.5 years ago, I would say they're pretty non-existent in that regard. But the connection to myself and therefore communicating what I need and want is important. It comes alongside setting boundaries as well. It is about saying what you want and then expecting someone to show up and deliver to some degree on that. Prior to that, I might have let other people dictate pace, and it's this thing. There's so much messaging in modern day dating, and I think it's slightly off for those with an anxious attachment style. There's this element of play it cool, don't chase them. And I agree, don't chase them, but you need to be driving that bus a little bit too. And if driving the bus at your pace is too much for someone else, then they aren't the right person for you. And I lost all of this, maybe shame if you felt like it, or trying to manipulate. And I've talked about the idea of manipulation on last week's episode, which I don't believe in the manipulation. I don't want to play games. I just want to be who I am generally and present myself in a healthy way and learn how to do that. And actually communicate and grow together. I'm not going to be perfect. I'm not saying that I get it right every time. You might think what I said about the demands of speaking to me tomorrow was too much. I think it was too much. I could have come across very stern in that. I'm not fussed that there's going to be things that I don't get right all the time, because I know that I've come leaps and bounds in terms of how I do communicate and what I say and what I do. I'm not afraid to jump in and to get involved with people in a healthy way. I'm not afraid to show affection. Before, when I'm going back now, I'm going way back, I wasn't really a fan of holding hands in public, certainly not kissing in public. That was weird. And I don't know where that came from. That feels more avoidant in nature. But interestingly, I'm a lot more, it's all back to this idea of being attuned to your body and knowing what you want. And once you have that confidence, you can then build this idea around self-esteem that you deserve a lovely, beautiful, healthy relationship with someone. And to do that, you have to set clear expectations, which you communicate to people through confidently presenting what you want and not being offended when someone says, I can't do that. You're entitled to feel upset because you are hopeful, but you don't dwell on the fact that it was something about you. You dwell on the fact that, oh, that's a bit naff. I need to move on. What a bit of a waste of time there, but at least it was 2 weeks, not 2 years. If you want to start moving towards a secure attachment with someone, then you're going to need to start to first be honest with yourself. But then you need to be honest and truthful with them, and do it directly. Don't beat around the bush in the sense of don't say things vaguely. Oh, maybe I want kids. Maybe I do want a family one day. If you know that that's what you want, don't hold that back. You guys know that my predominance is to not have children. Would I contemplate the idea? I would express my resistance to that quite heavily. I don't want to be pregnant. I don't want to give birth. I have other ideas of a family. Adopting is much higher up on my list of options. But then again, I don't want to give a full entire life to just being a parent. I don't see that as an identity that I would take on. Not a full-time parent. No. And I have to be honest about that when someone's got on their profile that they have kids and want to have more kids, for example. Be like, oh, okay, that's not really going to work very easily. Rather than starting to go, well, maybe I do want kids. Maybe I do. Maybe I want to be a mum. Maybe I'll miss out if I don't do it. No, you're welcome to test that idea. It's difficult to test that one. Once you're in with kids, you're kind of in. Like, that's what you got. They're yours. They're your responsibility. And that's a new identity you've got to take on for 18 plus years. So it's a hard one. It's one of the ones that we would struggle to test. As well as that, you need to drop accusations of intent behind people and their actions. This is very difficult with an anxious attachment style, because in terms of anxiety in general, the way that I've best heard it described is like you've got a fire alarm that's too sensitive. And unfortunately, what happens with that is that you notice when people pull away earlier than they even realise that they might be pulling away. And your alarm goes off, like big time, proper fire alarm going off. And unfortunately, quite often, it is correct because your body's learned what indicators there are to someone pulling away. However, part of me also thinks that this could be self-fulfilling prophecy, that you notice the pull away, and because your body reacts and it panics, you do something to push someone away, which might be accusations like, why aren't you talking to me as much as you used to? And because of your desire to take control, to know, to have certainty, you put pressure on the situation and that freaks them out and then they go. So to you, that's evidence that you were right, that what you noticed was true and it was true, but did you contribute to that becoming true? Ultimately, sometimes we react too early and don't let things play out, don't let things see, because we're worried about getting hurt. And we then build the anxiety and all of that uncertainty is built up inside of us when we just need to chill. One of my worst things that I was terrible at towards the beginning, very much so, was the old, when are they going to text me back scenario. I can deal with that now. I remember, in terms of messaging my partner now, that I remember the phase over summer where I would be doing Amazon Flex shifts and they would reply whilst I was doing them and I wouldn't reply for a little while. There was a healthy amount of distance created. I allowed for it. I could very easily have messaged back straight away. And it wasn't a game. Let me be clear. So a lot of people go down this route of you should match how quickly they respond to you. So if it took them 2 hours, you take 2 hours. That wasn't the approach that I went down to move myself to something more secure in the early days. So the intention there was to make sure I didn't get attached too quickly to someone. So I almost did do that, but didn't count the time. It was more like, if I've seen it once and I'm busy, such as doing an Amazon Flex shift, let's not rush to reply. If I was free, then I'm going to reply. That's what I mean by not playing games. But if I was actually busy, then let's just pause. We don't need to reply right now. It's lovely that they've replied. Wonderful. But let's take this easy, because you know your own pattern, Chantel. You know the mistakes you make going forwards. And sometimes that's being too available, too ready, and always there at the end of a phone. Calm it down. Take it slower than you usually do. And that kind of approach has been quite useful for me, particularly in the first 2 to 4 weeks of dating, I would say. The early, very early stages when you can get literally carried away by someone if you're not careful. Now, it's hard because it's so much fun when you find someone that you click with, you've got good opportunity to text and to talk, but it's dangerous if you're an anxious attachment style and you want to move to something more secure. Actually pacing yourself and managing replying, realizing that their responses don't mean a lot, particularly at this stage, in terms of how frequent they are to when you replied, and that you can take some time out too. You don't need to be pressuring yourself to reply quickly. If I reply quickly, they'll reply quickly. Pause, take it easy. Just go with the flow a little bit more. And that's hard to get out of the anxious attachment style, with that element of control and just wanting to show enthusiasm, being 110%, which is a great thing about someone with an anxious attachment. You want to create closeness, you're givers. Sometimes you give too much and sometimes you're too quick and you make assumptions and you want to know, you absolutely want to know what is going on, but we need to calm it down sometimes. And it's important not to lose yourself in all of this. Dating is particularly triggering, especially if you have either of the insecure attachment styles. And even for someone with a secure attachment style, that doesn't mean other areas of their lives don't come out and get revealed that they're maybe not so comfortable with. But this all takes time. It takes awareness of yourself and being honest with yourself. It isn't about being perfect. It's about making attempts at getting better at it. Knowing how you feel, knowing what you want, remembering that you're worthy of that and really believing it, building that self-esteem, that self-confidence, to go out there and communicate that effectively. And when someone tries to overstep that or change that, really considering if that's something that you can compromise on, because compromise is part of being in a secure relationship. You try to compromise. And that doesn't always happen, because sometimes each person is emotionally driven and triggered. But that is what you're looking for, compromise in the middle. It doesn't mean someone winning and someone losing, one person going one way or the other. You're trying to find this happy medium to get both people through, calm back down in a conflict situation and back at a point where you can communicate effectively and making sure both people's needs are met within a relationship experience. But it takes time. You can't improve this without dating. You have to be in the dating pool. You have to be going on dates. You have to be getting into slightly longer relationship versions. So you're not just on a first date, but you're getting to second date, third date, because you're determining that over weeks. And that's when these kind of things start to come out more. And you've got to be honest. You've got to be able to trust someone, and you've got to undo some of the stories that exist. Whether your attachment style did come from childhood or from a poor experience as an adult, there will be beliefs that are there that are working against your possibility of moving into a secure attachment style, because they're saying, but all men treat me badly, but they're all going to cheat on me. Or if they don't text me back, then that means they don't love me. Think about what really matters in a relationship. Is it a text message? Is it texting within 10 minutes? Or is it them making sure that they check in with you every day? Or is it that they'll be there for you if you call them because they know you need to speak to them? Is it they can make the time when you really need them? What is important? Really think about that. I know some of my things that I deemed important are misplaced, and I have explained that too. It's why I question marriage. For those that have been married and divorced, I hope you understand where I come from when I say it's a ring and a piece of paper. It means nothing unless you have action behind it. The ring and the piece of paper are the minor detail in a marriage. It's the consistently showing up every day, the small actions, the words, the acknowledgement, the support, the encouragement. They're what matter. And you can wear a ring and have a piece of paper, or you don't have to have a ring and a piece of paper, and your relationships can be equal in the way that they are effective, successful, and really show love. That's why the idea of marriage to me is not important. Although every now and then you sit and you go, oh, everyone else is getting engaged. Like, is my relationship not as good as theirs? Yeah, it is, because I don't know what their relationship looks like behind closed doors. Just because they got a ring and a piece of paper, does it mean that they're cleaning up their kitchen for them? Does it mean that they're communicating effectively? Does it mean that they're listening to one another and supporting one another? They're showing one symbolism for it. They're going all out and having a ceremony. But does it really show the strength of a relationship? It's the same when we look at attachment styles. What is it that we really need to feel loved? Think about love languages. Think about being heard, having feelings and emotions validated, being supported and encouraged, even for your wildest, strangest ideas. And through time and practice, you will get better at communicating. You will feel more confident at navigating intimate relationships with people. You won't feel like your attachment style gets to take hold of you so much anymore. You'll know a few procedures to follow when things are coming up for you, and you'll just feel better about dating. You won't be so worried about what might happen, because you know, one, that you're going to be okay, but two, that you've got the tools to get you through, even if you get triggered. And hopefully you find someone that can hold the space for you. If you are able to have a conversation with them about attachment styles, whether they know about them already or you're the first person to introduce them, it's quite nice, because they can understand your psychology and they have that intelligence and understanding to know what it's like to experience it through what you describe to them. This is what happens. This is what I'm like. This is what I can go to. And this is what I need when that happens. And this is how I want us to try and work together. And you've got to reciprocate that too, dependent on what their attachment style is and what they need, what they want in a relationship. It can't all be about you, but it should be, from your perspective, something that you focus on. This is for you to work on, but ultimately you will not solve it without being or leading into a relationship. The worst area for it is dating, because you're not at the commitment stage and you're trying to work out someone and find someone that will be able to support you through it, as well as all the other things to try and find someone that actually, you know, is right for you. But you can do it. Once you're in that early stage of dating with a little bit of commitment, even if not exclusive, but you're saying, yeah, I want to keep seeing you. And eventually, once you move into the 2 month mark, this is the time that it starts to really become the work, to do something to work on. You will experience it in early stage dating. Learn to manage that bit. And over time, you'll get good at that. And then you'll hit the 2 month mark bit and you'll have to start working on it there. And then you'll hit the 3, 4, 6 month marks. And it will show up in different ways at different times. But building that foundation, learning how to communicate, learning what you really want, and then sharing it with someone, holding yourself and them to it, means that you will get the outcome that you want, as opposed to compromising yourself all the time. Get attuned to your body, because your body knows when you're feeling a particular way. It doesn't mean you need to act the way it always feels, but get in tune with what's coming up and explore it. If you need to talk through that in any particular detail, then you can book a free 15-minute dating game plan session call with me that will get you started with a few steps for how to manage your anxious attachment style in dating. Otherwise, let me know how you're getting on, what's coming up for you in terms of your anxious attachment. Until next time, everybody, keep celebrating single life together.